to this. In the face of a growing gentrification effort and criminalization action by conservative, or I would say reactionary and bigoted forces in the city that are operating in exactly the opposite direction. I'm going to begin with a tape, actually the audio section of a video that was made of the last Santa Cruz City Council meeting, and that was 2 days ago on the 14th of September. Unexpectedly, certainly for me and I think for a lot of other people, an item appeared on the agenda which involved modifying the camping ordinance, which, generally speaking, is a taboo subject for city council members and has been for a decade. It's considered the third rail, it's a hot topic, it's poison, whatever you want to call it, just isn't brought up. And this particular ordinance change was brought forward by City Attorney John Barisone, and I think as a consequence of 2 months of militant, persistent, peaceful protest by activists who call themselves Peace Camp 2010, initially at the in front of the county building and then at City Hall, where they continue to this night to assemble and to peacefully try to use the public space in front of their legislative supposedly representatives to draw to their attention human rights abuses that need to be addressed and that are not being addressed, specifically the sleeping ban, blanket ban, and camping ban sections of the camping ordinance that criminalize sleeping in Santa Cruz for the city's 1,500 to 2,000 homeless in a city with shelter for less than 5% of that number. Anyway, here's the I'm going to begin very shortly, perhaps a little more introduction before I do, but we're going to hear the city council's discussion of an ordinance change brought forward by City Attorney John Barisone, which, for those of you who have internet, and probably many of you are listening to this or some of you on the internet as we speak, because we haven't really gotten our full transmitter strength back yet, and I'm not sure how far we're actually going out with this signal. You can tune to, or you can go to Santa Cruz Indie Media, and you can read some of the stuff I've written about this issue in greater detail. I've written a story called Camping Ordinance Revisions Passed at City Council. This is, again, at the indiebay.org/Santa Cruz website, Santa Cruz Indie Media. You can also go to an earlier story, Sleeping Ban at Council, Trade Your Constitutional Rights for a Place on Our Waiting List? And if you're also interested in the City Council candidate forums, there's a listing of some of the more recent forums that was brought to my attention by the only city council candidate in the November election of the Santa Cruz City Council, 3 seats of the 7. Steve Plaich is the only guy who actually supports ending the camping ordinance and restoring to Santa Cruz while bringing it into the same century that Los Angeles and San Diego are in as far as the technical law goes, where you're not allowed to criminalize people for sleeping if there's no shelter. Now, it doesn't mean they don't find other ways of crapping on people and messing with people. And we're going to learn about that hopefully soon, because at 6:30 I'm expecting to hear from Rocky Neptune of San Diego. He's supposed to call in and talk with us about the situation down there. He was the editor or main writer for a homeless newspaper that I really liked called Streetlight. And that paper is now defunct, but he's not. He's continuing to fight for the rights of homeless people in San Diego. I think he's running for mayor down there in 2012, or at least that's what I kind of picked up from the skivvy of indie of the internet. But we'll hear more about that at 6:30. Again, if you want to hear more about the sleeping ban ordinance of City Council, you can just listen to this discussion. I'm going to be interrupting it periodically, and I may get tired of listening to it since I sat through it 2 nights ago, and it wasn't terribly enlightening. What the city council was proposed, you're going to hear, is an ordinance that simply says, right now it says, if the armory is full, that's the winter shelter, then the city attorney shall dismiss all camping ban citations. This new addition says, and if individuals are on the waiting list of the River Street Shelter and the Homeless Services Center, which is the summer shelter, also the spring and the fall shelter, then they shall also be, tickets for those people shall be dismissed. And the point here is that there's very little shelter in the summer, and therefore there shouldn't even be any tickets issued, much less considered taken to court. They shouldn't just be dismissed. They should not even begin to go out. That's the situation, supposedly, that is required by the two legal settlements in Los Angeles and San Diego, the Jones and Spencer settlements, respectively, which I understand are not being respected very well, but which are, in fact, the settlements that are supposed to be respected. We need to have a similar settlement here in Santa Cruz. In fact, there is growing talk of another third injunction attempt to get an injunction against the city, requiring it to stop enforcing its unconstitutional sleeping ban, which violates survival necessities for homeless people and essentially sets them up as second-class citizens to be toyed with by the police at the whim of the individual police officer. Anyway, let's begin listening to the session. It was run by Ryan Coonerty, who is the vice mayor, but Mayor Rutkin is out of town. Coonerty is likely to be taking over in November because vice mayor usually becomes mayor, not through a process that we, the voters, engage in, but through the city council's own internal selection process. And Coonerty, as you will hear, cut short a lot of public comment in the fashion he usually does. He's not a guy who likes public comment particularly. And he also is not a guy, even though he's a constitutional lawyer, or so describes himself and teaches such courses at UC and Cabrillo, he's not a guy who really has too much respect for the Constitution insofar as it concerns poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz. Because he's also a merchant. Or let's put it this way, he comes from a family of merchants at the bookshop Santa Cruz who are strong voices in the Downtown Association. He runs an organization, or co-founded one, called Santa Cruz Next, which is concerned with small business startups. He's part of the business gentrification effort that I believe either has as one of its items in its agenda to clean up the downtown and remove the visible homeless from there, or if it's not on their agenda, it certainly isn't there. He's not concerned with protecting people against those who have protecting poor and homeless people against those who have that agenda. Let's hear a little bit of the city council meeting.
Introduction for publication. So we're amending Chapter 6.36 of the city's municipal code by requiring a dismissal of camping citations where a person cited demonstrates that on the date of citation he or she was currently on the waiting list for shelter services from one of the shelter programs offered by the Homeless Services Centers, Homeless Services Center, or the River Street Shelter in Santa Cruz.
It's interesting that Ryan says, we are amending. He doesn't say, we are proposing an amendment. He doesn't say, we're going to be discussing and considering an amendment. He says, we are amending. And that really is quite appropriate because the city council usually has its agenda well prepared in advance, its decisions well chewed over, thought out, and ready to go, usually from their staff, in this case the city attorney, John Barisone. And so in a way, we're getting a kind of unconscious truth from acting mayor Ryan Coonerty, that we are amending, whether you like it or not.
Assistant City Manager here to make the presentation.
Good afternoon, Council Members. Tina Scholl, City Manager's Office. And I just want to give a brief overview of what this ordinance change proposes. So the ordinance change, as Vice Mayor Coonerty discussed, does impact how we dismiss camping tickets issued for violation of our camping prohibition. So currently the procedure is restricted to the winter months when we have the winter shelter operating up the Armory. I believe it's November 1st through I think about April 15th is during that period. And during that period, if the Armory shelter is full, which technically happens at 75, if citations are issued, then our city attorney's office dismisses them administratively. And there's been comments and concerns about that from a range of perspectives. So what's being proposed here today, again, this is introduction for publication, not final adoption, are two different changes. The first is to increase the time span from those months I discussed to year-round. So it does broaden the amount of available days that this would would that tickets could be dismissed. Second is it incorporates a requirement for an affirmative action for a person who is seeking dismissal of a ticket to prove that they were on a waiting list for shelter. So you can go to the Homeless Services Center or the River Street Shelter and get on a waiting list if there aren't beds available to say, yes, I'm actively seeking shelter. So this ordinance change requires that that take place in order for the ticket to be dismissed. And the way it would work is that if someone was issued a ticket, the city attorney's office would call over to either the Homeless Services Center or the River Street Shelter and confirm that the name was on the waiting list, in which case the ticket would be dismissed. So that, in sum, is what is being proposed here tonight. Again, this is introduction for publication. If the council votes to move this forward, it will come back in 2 weeks for final adoption and then go into effect 30 days afterwards.
And it should be noted here a couple things. It's interesting that she says that the ranger input has been involved here. This is something I wasn't really noting before. And calls to mind some information I got from Anna Richardson, one of the two homeless musicians who recently suffered an abusive and unconstitutional permanent injunction against sleeping in the downtown area, compliments of the same city attorney's office of John Barisoni. This, not only is it criminal for them to sleep in Santa Cruz, they do it once in the downtown area or camp or trespass or do anything, any of the other variety of expanded infraction behaviors, they can be taken immediately to jail for contempt of court. And that's bizarre and also abusive. And I've talked about it on the air before. But Richardson, the final day of the trial on that permanent injunction, when I went out to find her to bring her into the trial so she could testify and did successfully find her, she was actually in the San Lorenzo benchlands in front of the courthouse when I found her. And she told me of an interesting conversation she had with Chief Ranger John Wallace, that it was very candid and heart-to-heart, and Wallace confided he didn't like giving tickets to people that he knew were going to be dismissed, that he didn't like the idea of people having to suffer in a situation where there was no shelter. If I understood her account of Ranger Wallace's perspective clearly, he's a guy who I've often criticized and will probably continue to criticize on the show as being overly zealous, abusive of poor and homeless people's rights, more respectful of trees and flowers than of poor human beings in the extreme, eager and never met a ticket he didn't like, and so forth. I've been concerned about him in that regard, and I've so described him in the past. And I don't think that description is entirely inaccurate based upon the reports I've gotten. But this was an interesting report to get, and it may tie in with what Tina Scholl, the assistant city manager, who just spoke at city council, said. Another thing to be said about this proposal is that, and this is something noticed by Sentinel writer J.M. Brown, who wrote a little bit about this in the Sentinel, this is sort of kind of, it's an attempt to both plug a hole in what may be considered the city's defense against a complete abolition of the camping ordinance through a court action by saying, tickets will be dismissed in the summer now, not just in the winter if we don't have any shelter. If people get on the waiting list and go in and get proof of that and take it to the city attorney so that we can no longer be, maybe we're less legally liable. I don't think they are less legally liable, because running homeless people through an irrelevant process when you know there's no shelter is a form of punishment in and of itself. So is waking them up in the middle of the night, searching them, ID checking them, maybe taking their property and arresting them if this is their second or third, quote, offense. Particularly if they're protesters, which has been happening to these people at Peace Camp 2010 a lot. So it's not really in any significant improvement in terms of a meaningful change at the root level. It is, however, does allow a homeless person to go over to the Homeless Service Center, and we're going to learn later if Monica Martinez, the executive director of the Homeless Service Center, is speaking accurately to us. The waiting list does not require you to document and provide a lot of documentation. You can get on the waiting list, she says, fairly easily. And once you're on the waiting list, they will give you evidence you are on it, which you can then bring into the city attorney to show, and they can then contact either they can contact the Homeless Service Center, the city attorney's office can, or they can believe your documentation and dismiss the citation. So instead of having to, what you have to do now is you have to get a ticket, go back to the Homeless Service Center, get a letter, that now is being provided only if you are on the waiting list, and this is a change that happened in the last 2 months, some say to penalize Peace Camp 2010 people who were coming in and saying, give us, you know, we got a ticket here, give us, you know, give us proof, show us that indeed the homeless service center was full that night, because it was. So we don't have to subpoena you in court and prove it with a necessity defense, but you just give us a letter, and that's the simplified way that it's done in these courts. And then the person would take that letter back to the court, and the court would dismiss the ticket. So in a way, it is a step. The homeless service center's demand that people be on the waiting list was a step backward. They should simply be providing letters for tickets. The tickets shouldn't even be issuing. But if the tickets are issued, the homeless service center, insofar as it's concerned with the rights and needs of homeless people, should be immediately issuing these letters saying, here, or just more broadly, and this is what we attempted to get the homeless service center to do, is issue a letter
that
said...
Any questions for Tina?
I don't want to be interrupted by Mayor Coonerty there, or Vice Mayor Coonerty. Or they should simply issue a blanket letter that says, we ain't got no shelter from April 15th to November 15th unless you're on a waiting list. And that takes 4 to 6 weeks if you're a male and 2 to 3 weeks if you're a female. So that's the situation, police. Don't be ticketing people unless you have called the shelter and found that on that night there actually is a bed. And even if they do that, the shelter is not set up to receive a person at that time of the night. So it's kind of a catch-22. But that wasn't the subject of this minor change. The minor change was simply you get a ticket. If you're on the waiting list, when you got the ticket, if this passes, and I'm almost positive it'll get a second reading, it did pass the first reading two nights ago, then you can, if you walk on over to the city attorney's office with proof that you are on the waiting list, I guess you have to identify yourself, or you have to have them call in, or you have to have a receipt of some kind, then the ticket will be dismissed. So that is what was being proposed. Let's hear some more.
Public comment.
I do have a question.
It's Catherine Byers.
I think I raised this when I was working a little bit with John on it, and there are other places that provide shelter besides just the River Street and this, like New Leaf, and some of the
New Leaf.
Yes, right. It's near New Leaf. I think there's a couple of drug places. And I don't know whether this could be expanded to those or if we've talked to them, but people are on waiting lists to get into treatment, which, of course, is shelter. So,
and I can't comment substantively on that question. I wasn't part of the dialogue when those two locations were decided. I don't know. Mayor Rotkin worked with the city attorney, John Barisoni, on selecting them. But that's absolutely true, and the ordinance does specify them. I don't see why they couldn't be added.
If we do our homework on it and find out that they meet some criteria, maybe they could be added.
And interesting to hear that Rotkin and Barisoni worked on this together. Again, kind of catching these details as we go through the actual tape, which I didn't notice as the actual hearing was happening. Again, this is essentially a vast sort of smoke and mirror show, the notion that being on a waiting list has some relation to actually getting into shelter. It does down the road. For example, we have a woman at the homeless protest, the Peace Camp 2010, Colette, who is, I think she's moved up to fifth on the waiting list after getting God knows how many tickets at City Hall and being hassled so many times, having her property taken on a number of occasions. But the fact of the matter is, none of that should be happening when there is a clear shelter insufficiency that is a huge, gaping, and obvious, and not likely to change in the future. And so this is all an attempt to give the illusion that there's some shelter process happening of a meaningful sort for the majority of people in Santa Cruz who need it. And it's just not true. And that's why it is kind of pernicious and fanciful. And it's part of the whole Rotkin mythology about the camping ordinance and the situation of homeless people. It's also interesting that people like Coonerty and Matthews and Robinson, three council members, they stated another point on the agenda. I think it was Matthews who said this, that they wanted to make sure that social service funding, that any new homeless services were located outside the county. I'm sorry, outside the city of Santa Cruz, in the county, not in the city, as part of their get them away from the city of Santa Cruz approach, which is really kind of disgusting as far as I'm concerned. In a way, it's a response to a particular constituency need, demand. It's not a need, it's a preference, it's a fear, it's a a form of hatred and paranoia about poor and homeless people. It's not going to happen to me. It won't happen to me. I don't want to see it here. And oh, it's going to scare the tourists. See, everything's going to be okay if we just close our eyes, pretend it is happening, and leave it to the police. I don't think so. And I think that time has shown that's not an effective approach. But in any case, back to the city council and their fluffy change in the camping ordinance that, again, as I said, it provides an additional option. It cuts short the need to get a letter and go back to court. All you need is proof to be on a waiting list and go to the city attorney. But it doesn't change the basic evil that's happening.
Enough about it myself right
well,
now.
Well, if you look at the ordinance change, it does specifically yes. enumerate those two locations.
Yes, it does.
So I think if you were to have others, we would have to either amend this
right.
or include more general language.
Right. Some general language. Good. And I just want to say I think it's significant here because it now includes the River Street Shelter,
mm-hmm.
which wasn't in the original.
Right, and before it was just the Armory.
Just the Armory.
Yeah,
so
now
this is a huge expansion.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a huge expansion at all. The River Street Shelter is 32 beds. It has a waiting list. And you can get on the Homeless Service Center waiting list just by walking in and signing up, as I understand it, if Monica Martinez is accurate and then it's on her board or she doesn't change her policy tomorrow, as they did, as I said, a month ago in order to exclude, apparently, to exclude Peace Camp 2010 sleepers in order to, maybe there was political pressure from Mayor Mike Rodkin. Same kind of political pressure that resulted in the shutdown of all constitutional activity at City Hall at night and the shutdown of benches at the library. A really cruel, extra-constitutional, unconstitutional attack on the right of people in public spaces with the political objective of destroying Peace Camp 2010, destroying homeless protest, and repressing this uncomfortable revelation to the community that there is a real problem that is not being addressed by Coonerty, by Robinson, by Rotkin, even by Lane and by Byers. And Byers' claim this is a big step forward is complete nonsense. She should know better. She poses as this really mild-mannered, she gives one the impression of being a very mild-mannered kind of quiet woman who really is very concerned, has her heart in the right place and that sort of thing. But if you examine her record, she was the one who sabotaged a meaningful reform of the sleeping ban 10 years ago when she was the mayor. And I think she is still trying to maintain the illusion she's not the executive director, but she's on the board of directors of the Homeless Services Center, or I believe I'm not sure she is now immediately, but she's. I think she's on and off that board frequently at different intervals. She's pushing falsehoods and illusions perhaps she's doing that in order to keep the services going as she sees them in a time when people are increasingly mean and harsh and don't mind funding $1 million for 8 cops downtown to harass more homeless people, or $4 million for a desal plant study. But the $120,000 to $160,000 a year that the Homeless Service Center gets is considered to be too much. It's really a telling commentary on the kinds of priorities and pressures the city council is responding to.
The months.
Their winter months.
And the Homeless Services Center and the River Street Shelter.
So it's good. Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Question?
Yeah, I was talking about this with some
Tony Madrigal.
People in the community. And one question
council
came
member.
Up in this conversation, which is, what about the people that they don't want to go to some of these locations because they have concerns of, you know, their own safety or... Well, let's just say, I mean, some folks don't get along with some other folks, you know, things like that. Or they just don't feel that the place is, you know, safe enough for them. And, I mean, so how do you address that? Go ahead.
Well, I definitely see, acknowledge, and can hear that concern, but I'd have to say that because this was expanded or being proposed to be expanded to all year, that mm-hmm. if you didn't have some sort of component that requires affirmative action on the part of someone seeking shelter, then it undermines the entire and it undermines the entire ordinance, because then anyone could say at any time during the year that, well, I'm camping and I should have it dismissed. And so I think that that component was important to keep it focused on individuals that are trying to get help in our community.
Notice the really mystifying and fabricating language here. Affirmative action by individuals really trying to get help undermine the camping ordinance. Anyone could go camp. Well, the question is, if there isn't shelter, there isn't shelter, and people have no choice but to camp. To make it a crime has been ruled a violation of the Constitution in other jurisdictions, and hopefully it will be ruled a violation here in this jurisdiction. So for Tina Scholl, who is one of the masterminds who helped undermine Measure K, the measure that supposedly made marijuana enforcement in Santa Cruz the lowest priority and was supposed to establish an oversight commission. She became their staff member and helped to run it into the ground and essentially turn it into a complete rubber stamp body for the city council's hostile, reefer madness-oriented perspective on marijuana. I know it's hard for people to believe, liberal Santa Cruz, but believe it. All over the state that's happening, and I've talked about that at length, and you can find more about that on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz. You look up Norse. If you search for Norse, you'll find my articles on that. So you have this mythology that it's all based on the notion that that there is a way for people to help themselves by getting on these waiting lists in terms of such a basic thing as shelter. And it just is not really true. You can, after a month or two, get into shelter for a month. The idea, though, that people should be penalized in the meantime or required to take affirmative action is simply a sop to those who see people who are poor or penniless and homeless on the streets as they're through their own fault. And therefore, they are bums and junkies and alcoholics, and they don't deserve any kind of special treatment or assistance or even basic human rights. Just get rid of them, get them out of sight, get them out of town. They have to prove they are worthy. It's a complete demonization of the victim. It's a complete reversal of the reality of the situation.
So then, in thinking it through about possible solutions, like I'd be interested in seeing some kind of additional provision that says that, you know, anybody that's on the waiting list or has filed a complaint about, you know, the services offered there as it pertains to their, you know, health and safety, that way it would be another positive affirmative action that they would have, it would be another step they have to undergo. So, and I guess, you know, that way folks, if they really, really felt that way, well, then they have to go and fill out a form that is provided at one of these locations and put it on paper that they don't feel safe there, and that's why they can't stay there.
Well, I think that would be something the council would consider not to take action on. I can point out some barriers to that being effective, just another thing to check, another thing to track and standardize.
Notice, here's Tina Scholl immediately jumping in to sabotage, raise objections to, in a very, you know, business-like manner, reasonable-sounding manner, to a proposal of points by Madrigal. Again, Madrigal's missing the main point, that any attempt to use the waiting list as a pretext or substitute for shelter and to claim that it is shelter and that somehow meets constitutional requirements and okays police going after people at night, waking them up, giving them citations, dragging them, making them leave the spot they're in, taking their property, all that is simply false. It's something he's missing the point on. But what he's trying to say is, well, they're going to be people who, you know, can't use the shelter services because of different things. And shouldn't we find a way? Suppose they have a complaint or a difference of opinion. He's trying to sort of, again, move around the deck chairs on the sinking ship. But notice how Tina Scholl doesn't even want that prospect discussed. It's too complicated. It involves too much records keeping. She's Rotkin's little helper here. Such is my perspective.
Barriers to that being effective. And so I can't comment any further on that, but again, this is the council's ordinance, and it can amend as you wish.
Monica.
Ask Monica over there, see what they... All right. Okay, we appreciate you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to open up to public comment now.
So you're giving 5 minutes up?
I wasn't asked by...
On both your machines yesterday, at home and at the office.
4 minutes to Huff.
So apparently Vice Mayor Coonerty doesn't check his machines, and he's shortchanging us a minute. And he goes further, as you'll hear. This is a situation at City Council. If you're an organization, you have the right to speak on behalf of an organization for 5 minutes.
Becky, the way... Becky? In order to get the way I do group presentations is I'm going to ask you to identify people in the audience who will not speak because you're speaking on their behalf as a member of Huff. So is anyone here a member of Huff and not going to speak?
Let's see. Linda and Robert actually quite a few people are members of Huff. I don't think that would be reasonable.
But in other words, you're speaking on their... If you get extra time as an organization, you speak on their behalf.
Excuse me.
What Coonerty is trying to do here is to shut down other speakers who would normally get... Well, they should get 3 minutes because it's a public hearing. But in fact, he's only going to give them 2 minutes each. Again, part of his cutback public comment. Let's get through this. We're not listening to you anyway, so why bother to have you talk and waste the public time? He doesn't say this. This is my interpretation of what he's doing. But he's now saying that if someone's going to speak on behalf of an organization that you're a member of, the implication is that you can't speak. He modifies this under pressure, however, as you will hear, or at least if I understand what he's doing, that is what happens.
I'm not a member of Huff, although I support them.
Linda Lemaster.
We don't keep a formal
membership. No, all I want to know is, are there people in the audience who would otherwise speak but will not speak because I'm giving you extra time? Okay, that's fine. So,
and two people raised their hands who I don't think even were members of Huff but were disgusted at what was going on here and just, you know, wanted to give Coonerty his pound of flesh and his pint of blood so he could get on with the very restricted public comment he allowed.
Sleeping should not be
Becky
a
Johnson.
Crime. 80% of American cities regulate camping quite adequately without outlawing the act of sleep. But repeal is sadly not on your agenda tonight. Item number 28 on its face acknowledges an issue Huff has attempted to raise for years. That is that you currently have dismissal of tickets when the armory shelter has been full. The policy begs the question, what does the city do with citations the remaining 8 months of the year when all the shelters are full? The answer has been to roust, move along, cite, and arrest those who were unable or unwilling to utilize the existing summer shelter. This situation ended under the 2000 Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals decision in the Eichhorn case. The court ruled that a homeless person who violated existing camping ordinances is entitled to a necessity defense. That means, yes, I slept in violation of the law, but I did so because I had no other option, and I did so to prevent a greater harm, that is, like getting sick or dying. Tonight's item, directing the city attorney to dismiss tickets when the summer shelter is full or when a person cited can prove that they are on the waiting list for the Homeless Services Center, only writes into law what each homeless person is already entitled to. To sleep innocently through the defense of necessity. Peace Camp 2010 has assembled to right the wrong of the sleeping ban and blanket ban. Police should not issue any citations or even awaken any individual sleeping unobstructively out of doors when there is no shelter for him or her. Period. We have asked that as a matter of policy and practice, a designated staff member of the Santa Cruz Police Department place a phone call or alternatively visit a website where such information could be posted and inform all police on patrol between 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. whether to cite for Municipal Code 6.36.01, Section A, the sleeping ban, Section B's blanket ban, if no shelter is available that night. Such a policy makes sense. It is more efficient. No tickets will ultimately end up dismissed, will accrue. Police resources will be saved. Homeless people will get their sleep, which the city can never restore, even if the person is ultimately found innocent. While I do not speak for Peace Camp 2010, I firmly believe that if such a change is enacted by this council, our protest will disband. Should the city go ahead and enact the language the council is considering tonight, then I wish to remind the council that whether that person is on the waiting list or not, they are entitled to a defense of necessity. Therefore, placing one's name on the waiting list of the Homeless Services Center should remain entirely voluntary, and dismissal of the citation by the city attorney should not reside solely upon placement of that person's name on the waiting list. And I'd like to add that simply placing the name on the waiting list is not all that's required. People have to go back every day or every other day or perhaps make a phone call and get their name to be stay current on that list. And so this
Your
is really
is
not
up?
Offering that much in helping homeless people.
Next speaker.
This is Corey Chase Lloyd. I've been in Santa Cruz for 3 years, not because I wanted to, because my child and my wife live here. She's not come here because she wanted to, but her daughter lives here. And I have to live. And in order to live, I have to sleep. It's my constitutional right to life. This does not address that my constitutional right to life and to gather peacefully has been violated. I say that if someone's camping and it's against the law, that it should be because they are doing harm or engaging in activities that are nefarious and not sleeping. Sleeping is my right. I say, no, you should not in any way dismiss because of a lack of shelter, a camping ticket. It's not right. It's there for a reason, isn't it? Because the camping ordinance isn't put into law to keep someone from sleeping, is it? I would think not. I think that it's there to keep people from gathering slovenly. I think the entire camping ordinance needs to be re-looked at because using a blanket is not camping. I've been houseless for 6 years, and I know what it is to shelter myself. And putting a tarp over myself when it's raining without posting a structure is not camping.
However, it is a violation of the camping ordinance, 6.36010B, which is called the blanket ban. And that is not changed by this ordinance, amendment.
Next speaker.
Hi, my name is Betsy Phillips, and I want to thank you for taking a step forward and trying to help with the homeless problem here. I'm really happy to see this happening. I have two suggestions. One, that a lot of us were just in shock. Maybe when the police come at a first time that they find somebody sleeping outside, that they had a card with a phone number to give them, that a place where they could call to find shelter, if they had a card like that, that they could just give them for the first time. And maybe once a person has registered for a shelter, if there was a card that they could carry with them so that when the police come, they could show the police this card that says, you know, I'm registered, I'm waiting for shelter at this place, and then we could avoid the ticket procedure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next speaker.
I would like to speak on behalf of Housing Now in Santa Cruz.
This is Linda LeMaster.
Excuse me. I'm going to try to read and talk at the same time, so forgive me if it doesn't go smooth. Adding further restrictions to the Muni Code 6.36010 or the camping or sleeping ban seems to me a step in the wrong direction. In recent months, I've had a tertiary relationship with the homeless folks at Peace Camp 2010. I've been getting glimpses of the lately growing river of newly homeless people here. Surges, especially among couples and youth, like I haven't seen anything like that much of a deluge of people ever before, but I've been watching the streets since, in this capacity, since like 1976, before we started using that word. Nobody in Santa Cruz County seems to be noticing the newly displaced population systemically. Many folks with no or nearly no survival skills at all are being entrapped in this double bind dragnet that criminalizes, trivializes, and pushes further into harm's way many of these people reduced to sleeping upon our byways in this city. I believe more than an apology is needed for both the SCPD beat officers who deal bravely and daily with our displaced citizens and for homeless individuals, especially the newly in the streets, but the harm to longtime survivors is heartbreaking as well. One of this law's limitations seems worsened due to the contradictory messages from this body, the City Council, and some of its staff engaging with the public. Most of the Peace Camp 2010 regulars that I've talked to are already clients at Homeless Services Center and other resources in the community. They're on those lists. They're on washing machine lists, food lists. I'm not quite finished. Obviously, these relationships have not led to beds or even to legal floor or curb space to a useful degree. A meeting had been planned for today with Homeless Services Center Board Chair Catherine Byers, supportive Peace Camp Attorney Ed Fry, and myself. We plan to explore and discuss wise policy and economy, and it got bumped by this council's hurry.
Thank you. Your time's up. We've got to...
Could please you please allow me the organization? I only need less than a minute to finish.
I'm not inclined because we're trying to give everybody the same amount of time. So if you can wrap up in one sentence your thought, you can also submit your letter here and we'll read it.
I will go to my last sentence and write you a letter about my disappointment along with the piece I'm having to skip. Thank you. I do not support this ordinance being used for dispatching folks into ever worsening and ever shrinking spaces at night. Over and over, and I see the city restrict its public resources in response to increasing needs. You can't get blood from a turnip.
Thank you.
Bravo.
Again, it should be pointed out that the normal time for a public comment on ordinance changes in public hearings is 3 minutes, not 2 minutes. There were a total of, I don't know, 5 or 10 speakers. It was the end of the day. This was the last item on the agenda. Coonerty's refusal to allow her to finish her statements was just kind of mean and cold. And also, I think, self-interested, because Coonerty does not want to hear what she has to say and does not want what she has to say to go out to the community.
My name is Robert Facer. I'm an Amish minister.
Mr. Facer is famous on this station anyway. He and I were in trial today for singing sinister songs on the sidewalk. And that trial will conclude, by the way, tomorrow, starting at 10:30, probably around 12, though we may come back for a final hour in the afternoon. Probably will, in fact. But he also is... been convicted of sleeping on the beach, and that case is under appeal.
It now stands, or the amended version. I'm Amish. My religion frowns on machines which use fire in their working, so it is hard to escape any situation as moving long distances involves real work. So I was forced to watch as the city mowed the edge of the San Lorenzo River for the third year in a row as an enforcement measure to prevent people from sleeping here. I believe that decision by the city was overkill. It is also evidence that this city is actually ruled mostly by people who do not live here. If they did live in this area, they would not attack their only refuge in the event that they are in a true emergency, hunted by hostile persons with blood in their minds and knives or guns in their hands. In such an event, they would have no place at all to hide in Santa Cruz at present, walking distance from this spot. Poverty is a problem which is not possible to erase. The very structure of the anatomy of a woman may indicate that some people will always be poor and desperate. And as population increases, the number of such will increase also. There is a way to deal with the existence of poverty without destroying the only safety net against the day when you are poor yourself. It can be divided into three parts. First, as I have suggested before, one can issue permits which allow camping any place in the city which is public land, parkland, or state-owned public land, or on private property with permission of the owner. The permits must be renewed each week at no cost. If, however, one fails to renew the permit, one can't get another for 6 months, and the sleeping ban then comes into effect, and one can be cited for an infraction, evicted, and etc. The effect this would have would cause those with a tendency to travel to stay away if they were not here to renew their permit. Secondly, one could go to the root of most violence and rowdy antisocial behavior and
your
make distilled
up.
Alcohol. Oh, excuse me. Can I have another
finish,
2 minutes?
Finish your sentence, please.
Okay. And make distilled alcohol illegal to sell by the bottle in Santa Cruz. Wine you could still buy and sell. In one fell swoop, you would get rid of all those who are addicted to distilled alcohol to the extent that they were no longer wealthy enough so that they could run their own supply from someplace other than here or buy higher priced drinks at a licensed bar.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Next speaker.
Bravo.
Members of the community, I want to thank Peace Camp 2010 and those community members who continue to support the protest outside City Hall, which no doubt will continue in spite of this somewhat positive change. Let's give the council some credit. It does now, of course, allow for, if you can get on a waiting list and the criteria are unclear, if you check in and the criteria are unclear for that, I would suggest that there be some minor amendments made to this. Not because it's going to deal with the basic issue that there's no shelter. There's 48 beds tonight in the Paul Lee Loft and a few others scattered through shelters throughout the city, but nothing significantly beyond that. In terms of an emergency walk-in shelter, if you ask them, there is zero shelter tonight. So it does no good to say, well, you're on a waiting list because you still have to sleep outside. And if you're what you're doing is you're penalizing people who are then woken up, ID'd, searched, perhaps their property taken, criminalized, and then they get to go later to the city attorney and say, gee, dismiss my citation. Well, that's not going to end the court challenge, and that's not going to end the protest, and that's not going to end the human rights abuse. But if you are serious about wanting to have an actual procedure where you have tickets written off in a more convenient way, add a requirement to this initiative that everyone who gets on the waiting list will get a receipt that they can then show to a police officer who will then not issue a ticket on seeing that receipt. That is my suggestion. That will actually save police resources. It'll cut back on the hostility. Who knows? It might even end the protest. I don't know. But that seems to me to be a more effective way to proceed, although this is a minor step forward to what you're doing. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Ed Fry, and I wanted to ask you to consider the question that I keep asking and don't get a satisfactory answer to, and that is the entire principle of arresting people, waking them up, citing them, making them jump through all these hoops just in order to get told that they're not guilty. Who is being injured here? When a person is sleeping, assuming he or she is sleeping in a place that is not going to disrupt anyone else's schedule or rights and so on, who is it? Or what is it? What's the injury here? And who's the victim? Why should this be criminal at all? So long as the people who have to sleep without a house, or some who choose to sleep without a house, aren't interfering with anyone else. I asked that question at Mr. Facer's trial. I asked it of the judge and I asked it of the city attorney. Can you please identify the nature of the injury here? And can you identify the victim? And I still haven't gotten any answer from anyone yet. I asked Mr. Coonerty the other day at another meeting, and he deferred as inappropriate at the time. But I would ask you to consider the possibility that what you are doing here in criminalizing sleep is you're demonizing the homeless. You think you've arrived at a politically acceptable and politically correct way to burn the Quran. Your victim here now is the untouchables, the dirty, unkempt homeless.
Your time is up.
Thank you.
And more than pretty speeches and stirring rhetoric, Ed Frey is a man who every night takes time out of his life to come down in front of City Hall with a truck, provide a sanitation facility for homeless people that the city refuses to provide at night. There are no bathrooms in the downtown city of Santa Cruz at night. And he also has taken tickets and citations with homeless people, and he'll probably be down there tonight for those of you who want to check out Peace Camp 2010. Usually there's a gathering, if not a meeting, around 8 or 8:15 or 8:30 down there or shortly after the show ends. And it's... I sometimes get mixed feelings toward it. I feel in a way that there's a futility to it. At the same time, there's a nobility to it. And there's also something that's inspiring in what's going on with the people who are refusing to say, no, we're not going to leave. We're going to continue to bring this issue up again and again. And that's true with a core of people down there, Gary, a man named Scum, people like Todd and Art, some who can't really directly be down there all the time because they've been given stay-away orders, not because they're criminals, but because they have to sleep at night, and in sleeping at night and doing so in a public, politically visible way, trying to speak up for other homeless people, they've been singled out and their rights taken away by our courts that are supposed to be protecting rights. So I want to give Ed Frey a tip of the hat before I continue. He and I sometimes have our differences, and certainly differences in style and approach. Ed Frey has also been talking about trying to organize an injunction against the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz, and there are, surprisingly to me, people who are now attorneys and legal professionals who seem to be willing to join him. So I don't know. I've seen this effort happen twice before and fail in an attempt to get an injunction against the sleeping ordinance. But who knows? Maybe third time is a charm. We'll see. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. We're listening to the Santa Cruz City Council's September 14th hearing. Item 28 on the agenda, amendments to the camping ordinance that essentially make it slightly easier to sign off citations if you are on a waiting list at the Homeless Service Center. And the proposal, the activists who've been protesting outside City Hall are saying various things, but one of the messages of Ed Frey is that there's a very simple solution, which is have the police call the Homeless Service Center on the night in question and see if there's any space. If there's no space, don't even bother homeless people. Don't even wake them up and look for a receipt for being on the waiting list. They shouldn't have to go be on the waiting list in order to be left alone as human beings. That's one of the basic constitutional rights we have, unless there's some other problem. Now, what about the problem we've heard about the despoiling of the environment or messy camping or, you know, pooing and peeing, although without public facilities, people are going to poo and pee whether you tell them to not do it or not. That's just the reality of the human condition. But, you know, what do you do about about camping that despoils the environment. And the answer to that, I continue to look to the proposal I heard from John Golder, who's a one-time homeless man, one-time mega property owner, now a renter, who just simply suggested that you make it a crime to camp in a littered area unless you've cleaned it up. So it would not only give the police the opportunity to ticket people who are camping in a messy way without having to find them guilty of actually dropping the litter, but it would also provide an incentive for people to clean up the area. Of course, the problem with this for the city authorities is that it would justify, it would legitimize poor people, and it would acknowledge the reality of people needing to camp, needing to sleep outside, needing to be in their vehicle, and it would acknowledge the fact that there's a huge social and economic crisis that they don't want to acknowledge, and human needs that they don't want, not only do they not want to meet those needs, but they don't want people to even try to meet those needs in the city jurisdiction. They have their own little city on a hill. Or
are there any other speakers besides Mr. Tomas?
And again, that Coonerty is always interrupting me. Oh, boy. But here I can cut him off. Anyway, I think that that's a very interesting proposal, that that penalties for camping in a littered area, requiring a camper or a sleeper even to make sure before they go to sleep that the area they're in be clean of debris. And it could be abused in different ways by different sides, but I think it would be a major step forward. You dump the current camping ordinance and you make it legal to sleep, camp, cover up with blankets in areas where they're not engaged, where there's, you know, where commerce is not a big activity, where residents are not alarmed, and where when we tried to pass a voter initiative on this, we suggested certain areas of the city be ruled out, and that's another way of addressing this. But I think Mr. Fry's proposal is also relevant when he says that people who sleep or camp in areas that are not a public health and safety problem should not be harassed, even if there is indoor shelter available. I think that breaks new ground, and in a way it just sort of restores and reaffirms old ground. Getting back to the Santa Cruz City Council again.
Mr. Coonerty, Vice Mayor Don Lane, City Council.
Michael Tomasi.
I ain't homeless, man. But it took me a year and a half to get a place to live. 3 months of that, I got tired of being chased out of all these places. I went down to your Santa Cruz Police Department, and I slept on their step for 3 months. Not one of these police officers bothered me. As a matter of fact, Mr. House came out and gave me $20 to have breakfast a few times. And I just want to know why it is illegal to go to sleep. Because if you don't go to sleep, you become a real maniac, man. It changes love into hate. It does all the bad things to you, you understand? So, Mr. Coonerty, you should make a spot for these poor homeless people to go to, man. And when they don't have a place to live in your armory and your HP and all your little spots you got for them, you should put a spot up in that mountains or along the river, like this man said, and let them go to sleep. And stop sending your police department out there. It's giving your police department a bad name. You people put me in jail. You people took the sight from my left eye, broke my hand, destroyed my dog, and put me in a psycho ward for trying to go to sleep. Now, what is your problem? Tell me, Mr. Coonerty. Tell me, City Council. Tell me, Police Department. What is the problem? Why can't you give these people a place somewhere to stay? Give them some toilets and some showers so they could take a shower so they don't smell like dog dew. Man, you know what, man? I fought for this country, and a lot of people have fought for this country that are homeless. Why don't you try taking care of them, Mr. Coonerty? Because you know something? You people are looking sad.
Thank you,
Thank you. Hey, don't you like me to use the word sad?
Sad's fine.
Your time's all good. Up. Thank you, sir. You're sad.
All right. Mr. Tomasi, let's behave. All right.
Hi, members of the council. My name is Monica Martinez. I'm the executive director at the Homeless Services Center. I want to just acknowledge that a lot of people who've spoken today are coming from a very compassionate place. It sounds like everybody here agrees that there isn't enough shelter in Santa Cruz to meet the need of the number of homeless people in this community. And so I think that before we go into details, we really do want to use this as an opportunity to highlight the fact that there's still not enough shelter and there's still a need for solutions to homelessness in this community. However, if we're going to have a camping ban in Santa Cruz, because it sounds like that's not what's on the agenda, if we're going to have that, then I think that we do need to make it more compassionate and more flexible so that way it does meet the needs of our community.
Sounds a little like George Bush, a kindler, gentler, George Bush Sr., a kindler, gentler, thousand points of light, and so forth. This begs the question, if we're going to have a camping ban, you know, if we're going to be engaging in torture, let's make it a little more gentle and let's be a bit more compassionate in how we do it. Because waking people up at night, depriving them of sleep, sending through a rigmarole, which is ultimately going to result in no criminal behavior, but is simply being done, no criminal conviction, but is simply being done to deter people from coming to your area, is a form of, I think, systematic and institutional abuse against human beings, poor human beings who don't have the protection of money or attorneys or weapons to defend themselves with. So to talk about, we're all agreed here there's a shelter shortage, but since we want there to be a camping ordinance, let's be very compassionate. You know, since we're going to be torturing you anyway, let's try to do it more gently.
And so in that, we can be supportive of this amendment because I do believe that this amendment is helping to make the camping ban more compassionate. I think that by dismissing when somebody's on the waiting list, it's encouraging people to come and access services, and not only my shelter, but also at the River Street shelter. We do have the means and the resources to confirm or deny whether or not somebody's on the wait list. We cannot post the wait list or distribute it, but we could give a yes or no answer to that. And like I said, we want people to come and access our services because it's not just coming and signing up and getting on the wait list. Yeah. We're hoping that people come, they get a warm, nutritious meal. Perhaps they can sign up for food stamps through our FSET program. Perhaps they can come and access the county health clinic that's on site and get some medical and mental health services that they likely need. We're really hoping
time
to use that time.
Go ahead, finish.
Of course, Ryan Kennedy is going to give his bureaucrat an extra time to speak. Notice how this is sort of a twisted kind of logic. We're going to help you by bullying you into coming to the Homeless Service Center because if you don't, you won't get your ticket written off. When, in fact, you shouldn't be getting a ticket in the first place because there is no shelter and we can't provide it for the overwhelming majority of homeless people in Santa Cruz. Even if there weren't a waiting list in the sense that we just don't have enough room. It's just not there. So it's disingenuous. It seems to be self-interested for this particular person who's the executive director, Monica Martinez, to go on about how they're really just trying to be super compassionate here and provide other services by, you know, grabbing people by the scruff of the neck and requiring them to come in and colluding with this whole process instead of suggesting that they don't appreciate this. They don't appreciate being made into essentially a bullying service, a bullying bureaucratic surveillance system over homeless people to which are required to come in to avoid a bogus criminalization status. It's particularly depressing to me because I later learned that Monica Martinez worked in Skid Row and saw abuses against the homeless down there by the LAPD. she should know full well just what is going on, and she should understand that a similar process is happening up here under a more genteel facade. And the fact that she's not speaking up on this issue, I heard this before from Ken Cole, the former Homeless Service Center director, that, you know, we can't, I'm not really an advocate anymore, I'm a social service provider, and that's different because we've got to get grants, and on our board of directors are police and judges and people of that sort. It's kind of, it's depressing, and it's actually kind of makes one feel a little dirty talking to boards like this, because they are posing as people compassionately trying to take care of homeless individuals, and yet they're ignoring the most fundamental issue in exchange for the crumbs that are given them by the city. Special deals with the city attorney and a bigoted city mayor, Mike Rodkin, on this issue. I have to say, maybe he's not bigoted, maybe he's opportunistic, but after so many years observing his positions on the sleeping ban, I have to say, I have to feel there as a form of at least functional, effective, if not felt, bigotry there. I guess politicians maybe don't really have to feel anything. They just are responding to try to work around the prejudices and fears of the people that they have to get votes from in the next election or that they are pandering to. I don't know. Anyway, again, reminder, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I hope we're actually broadcasting right now. Let me take a quick peek here. Yeah, we are broadcasting. Cracky. Probably broadcasting very far, but you can call in if you want to talk on Free Radio, 427-3772. 427-3772 is the call-in number. I'm going to be continuing, kind of working my way through the city council meeting. It looks like Rocky Neptune of San Diego, even though I got messages from him earlier this week that he was going to call tonight, has apparently not, or hasn't got the right number, or for some reason he's not getting through. So we'll continue with this analysis and discussion from City Council. Wait, could this be a... We have a phone call. Well, let's see who this is. Hi, you're on Free Radio with Robert. Hello? 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 I can't hear you. Let me try something else here. Hello? Where are you calling from? You know, you should try the other number because you're not coming through on the board for some reason. Try 427-3772. 3772. All right. And an actual caller by Cracky. This is a nice turn of events. Again, the call-in number, once this caller hangs up, is 427-3772. Hope we do better on this line. Hi, I hope you can hear me.
I hear you.
All right. Oh, what's your name, caller?
Matthew.
Hey, Matthew. Welcome again to Free Radio.
Thank you.
Yes.
Did you know jaywalking is a crime?
Oh, yeah. I've been ticketed and convicted of jaywalking, even though I wasn't jaywalking. But, yeah, it is a crime.
I yelled at you here, okay?
Yeah,
you were crossing towards the jail.
To use that time.
I'm sorry?
You were jaywalking from the courthouse to the jail, and I yelled at you out my car window.
Oh, you did. Oh, okay. Fair enough. I appreciate the warning. Go ahead.
Anyway, you keep talking about some deeper issues within the system, it sounds like, regarding this homelessness issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of get the feeling that you're just touching the tip of the iceberg with the systemic problem, you know, that we have in this country.
Oh, for sure.
Capitalism and
for sure.
And this whole idea of, you know, the wealthy, you know, giving us little handouts.
For sure.
You know, like people lower down on the totem pole.
Right.
Crumbs of the rich.
I'm really looking at the aspect of a particularly abusive law in Santa Cruz that criminalizes people's right to take care of themselves. The law that criminalizes sleep at night after 11 o'clock.
Right. I hear you.
Yeah.
I couldn't help hear the echoes of a you know much larger problem that until that gets resolved, it doesn't seem like. Not that you shouldn't fight for it, I'm not trying to say that, but it seems like the larger systemic problem is going to be
It's more relevant for sure in the sense that, I mean, it's going to be creating homelessness. It's going to be creating a lot of other problems, and solving this problem is not going to address that problem.
And the politicians' willingness to do something about it, you know, these are stepping stones for politicians. You know, these running for city council. It seems to be a stepping stone for their career. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced that in the juvenile justice system where people, you know, they kind of want to appear to be doing good, but yet their motivation is simply their own gain. And again, that's a fundamental problem in our society.
Yeah.
But jumping over to another issue, when I looked on the webpage for city council meetings,
yeah,
and it says the second and fourth.
Right. Second and fourth Tuesday.
It doesn't seem like they're following this. Can you help me with that?
Say that one more time.
It doesn't seem like they're following the protocol of a city council meeting every second and fourth.
Well,
Tuesday?
Remember today, this is the second Tuesday was the 14th, and so they had a council meeting in the afternoon then. That's what we're listening to.
Okay.
Then they had a special meeting on the 7th because they had to ram through the rental inspection ordinance, and they had to do it in a way before the UCSC settlement deadline hit. I don't know if you've been following that issue, but that was a special session. That was not a regular city council session. The next regular session is September. There we go. September 28th, which will be the fourth Tuesday in September.
They will have a meeting then.
Unless we're really fortunate, they all resign, which would be very nice.
That's what I wanted to run on, but for everyone, you know, no recumbents, you know, everyone out.
Right. Well, you're going to get a worse city council, I'm afraid, coming up in November. Although there is one candidate I recommend, and there's a city council forum tonight, by the way, for those interested, the gay, bisexual, lesbian, transgender forum, and that I believe is at Loudoun Nelson Center, and I think it started at 6:30, maybe at 7. And if people want to go to listen to the council candidates talk on issues, they can. That's the Loudoun Nelson Center at Center and Laurel Streets. So people want to go check that out. Anything else, caller?
I think that's it. Thank you. Anybody you're endorsing for city council? What's the rules with Kevin Moon? Anybody?
Steve Pletch is the one guy I have a personal affection for him because he keeps coming to my trial. My trial resumes again at 10:30 tomorrow in Department 10 in the basement of the county building for singing sinister pro-homeless songs on the sidewalk that apparently disturbed a daytime sleeping resident. But Pletch is at these forums. He's the only person who opposes the sleeping ban. All the rest of them, including so-called liberals like Ron Pomerantz and David Foster, and, you know, people who are militantly anti-establishment on the right, like Kevin Moon, Gus Sebeo, are not interested in, you know, they have only hostility for homeless people, characterizing them as bums and drunk skunks and punks was how one commentator DAG at KSCO used to put it 20 years ago. And it's the same bigoted mentality today as it was then.
Well, it looks like we have a lot of work cut out for us. I'll let you go. I appreciate your time, sir.
Hey, thank you, man.
Yeah, you betcha.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Phone lines are open,
427-3772,
and that actually, the second voice you're hearing, and we're about to hear in more detail, is Monica Martinez, Executive Director of the Homeless Services Center, who Mayor Coonerty has given, Acting Mayor Coonerty has given more time to in this sleeping ban ordinance discussion from two nights ago at City Council.
So that's why we can be supportive of this as well. And really, we just want to continue to build towards reasonable, compassionate solutions towards homelessness with the long-term goal in sight to actually provide the services necessary to end homelessness in Santa Cruz.
This is all just, you know, I actually believe she believes what she's saying, and she feels that the problem is it's complete rhetoric. If she's supporting a proposal that continues to hobble, exhaust, and criminalize homeless people who have no shelter and who yet are assigned to run some sort of a marathon race of going down, getting on the waiting list, getting hassled by the police, like bringing that ticket into the city attorney themselves, getting it dismissed, going out again, having it happen again, it's abusive. And not to speak about that, not to be clear about that, not to say, look, we've got no shelter, Mr. Mayor, be aware of that. So, yeah, we can't really support this, not in any meaningful way, because it hurts homeless people. It continues to hurt homeless people. Yeah, it saves them a trip out to the homeless service center and to the court, but they still have to go out to the homeless service center to get on the waiting list and then go back over to the city attorney's office. And it still allows the police to violate their privacy, break up their sleep, make it more difficult for them to come out of homelessness. So it's, frankly, it's simply fluffy crap that she's talking about, and it should be properly labeled as such.
I have any questions for Monica while she's here? About, yeah. Catherine?
The waiting list.
Catherine Byers.
I mean, just take me through that. Someone shows up and there's... Well, anyway, tell me.
It's a good question. The waiting list, anybody can come to the drop-in day center during our open hours and sign up for the wait list. They fill out an information packet. They get on the list. And the reason why we can't generally tell somebody exactly how long that wait list can last is because the nature of the population is that people move around. They may be accessible or not when their name comes up. People may move out of the shelter, things like that. But typically the wait can be anywhere from a few days to 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, or longer. So somebody gets on the wait list. Every Monday, Monday morning, people move out. We offer our beds for 30 days at a time. And Monday morning, we also post the availability of beds at our center and the names of the people who are on the wait list whose names have come up. They have until Wednesday to access those beds. And on Wednesday, we'll start shuffling through the wait list and hoping that somebody on site is there who's on the wait list to claim those beds. If nobody's there, that bed's not going to go empty. We're going to start pulling people from our dinner line or from our mail line and giving them that bed for the 30 days. So that's pretty much how it works.
A little bit unclear here. Maybe I'll ask her because Monica did allow me to interview her afterward. Does that mean between Monday and Wednesday the beds are empty as we sit around waiting for people to come in? But, you know, there aren't that many beds, so it's not that significant. We're talking about 48 beds of monthly turnover. Let's say it happens every week. Let's say 12 beds a week. So we're talking about 12 beds out of a population of waiting list. When I talked to Daniel White, the manager there who's under Monica Martinez, who's speaking, at least 25 people are on the waiting list. So there's no shelter there. There's no room at the inn on any particular night, generally speaking. And so to claim that some you have to go through a process to prove you went down there to do it is simply adding a burden to homeless people that the most vulnerable people, which they are, shouldn't be forced to carry.
We basically encourage people to check in if their name has come up on Mondays or Monday through Wednesday. That's when we want them to check in. If their name comes up, it's posted, they don't claim that bed, they do need to come back and re-put their name on the list.
You have a question, Tony?
Yeah, Mr. Norris had a suggestion about some kind of a receipt. How do you see that as feasible? Could that be implemented? How could that work?
When somebody does come and sign up on the wait list, we're happy to give them a verification that happened. It's not up to me as to whether or not the police cite somebody for that or what the city attorney does with that, but administratively we can give somebody proof of signing up for the wait list.
So she sounds like she's trying to be helpful, but she could urge the police not to do that. You know, I'd like to hear them advocating in that way, but of course I haven't. And again, when we, Ed Fry, myself, and Linda LeMaster went to the Homeless Service Center's Board of Directors, and Monica Martinez, the woman speaking, was actually at the meeting, we simply asked them to give us a letter and give the community a letter that said, there's generally no space available on a walk-in basis except for the 4 to 6 week waiting list throughout the summer, late spring, and early fall. And they have so far declined to do that. Now, I've made that request again of Monica Martinez and Sally Williams, the chair of the board of the Homeless Services Center, and made the same request to Catherine Byers and Don Lane, council members who have at one time or another, I think Lane currently is, were on the board of directors of the Homeless Service Center. And I'm meeting, we're having public meetings with these two council members next week for those who want to come. The meeting with Don Lane is Thursday at Joe's Pizza at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The meeting with Catherine Byers is Wednesday at 1:30. in front of City Hall, where Peace Camp 2010 sleeps at night on the sidewalk in front of the City Hall building across from the main library. Again, Wednesday at 1:30 at City Hall sidewalk. Thursday, not Tuesday, I didn't say Tuesday, Thursday, I guess it's, let's see, today is Thursday the 16th, so it would be Thursday the 23rd at 2 o'clock at Joe's Pizza, which is, I'm talking about the downtown Joe's Pizza. It used to be Badass Coffee. It's across from New Leaf Market.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, if we were to ask, you know, require that in our in the motion tonight, you know, some kind of a way, I'm sure you guys will figure out some kind of way to, you know, prevent duplication, falsification of things. I'm just putting that out there. You know, time stamp.
I think that those things could be a risk, of course, like any other document. Right. I think what that wouldn't say was whether or not somebody's name had come up on the list. If they're carrying that around a month later and their name came up 2 weeks prior and they were no longer on the list because they lost that that opportunity, there's not really much we can do about that.
I see.
It's something to consider.
And actually, it wouldn't be really possible to falsify this, because even if you got documentation you were on the waiting list, and let's say maybe you forged documentation that you were on the waiting list, such a great thing to be on the waiting list, got a ticket, went into the city attorney's office, they wouldn't just look at your documentation. They would call the Homeless Service Center, and they would ask, are they on the waiting list? And if you were on the waiting list, whether you had false documentation or true documentation, your ticket would be dismissed. If not, it wouldn't be. Now, you might say, well, suppose you used a false name. Well, false names are a misdemeanor, and they have an additional criminal penalty attached, and that can be very serious. I think people are more interested. They would be better advised to violate the camping law and not attend their tickets, which are only infractions until three or more are unattended, at which point they become jailing crimes. Now, a whole other subject, which I've talked about in the past. But in any case, it's not really an important consideration. Of course, the entire procedure is, as I said before, a form of ring around the rosy, merry-go-round, let's pretend we're engaging in a meaningful process here, when in fact we're just trying to wear the homeless down so they'll just collapse on the ground or go somewhere else, or will satisfy those who want to punish them because they believe that their visibility is hurting the economy.
Would it be too cumbersome if a person had to go get one every day, like a daily one, a daily receipt?
To be honest, yes. I think that it would be cumbersome for probably both parties. We're hoping that while somebody's homeless, they're, you know, trying to meet the best quality of life that they possibly can, and asking them to do that probably wouldn't improve their quality of life.
In fact, asking them to do any of this doesn't improve their quality of life. It simply justifies an existing illusory system that supposedly is trying to help homeless people, but actually is mainly concerned with making sure homeless people don't sleep visibly or in groups or in well-lighted areas or in places where they might help each other in a community setting, because that would set up, you know, Rotkinvilles all over the place and show that there is a lot of poverty where people actually need to get together, and as they have in the prior depression, do and did get together. Tony isn't exactly the brightest, sharpest tool in the shed, as they say, on this matter, but he has a good heart, and it's too bad that he hasn't been willing to be public and to deal with some strong questioning. I think he's got a lot of vulnerability, and he's sensitive to criticism. And when we had a meeting with him, it was recorded, as we told him it was going to be. We played the tape on free radio. He refused to have a second meeting with Huff. I think that was in 2004 or 2005, and he just hasn't been willing to come back and talk again. But in fact, although his proposals are often naive and they kind of come from the gut and sometimes not very well thought out, he is one of the few people who's raised questions about the police department, though not in any effective or consistent way, but on occasion he's raised those questions. He opposed the rental inspection annual ordinance, which was simply a fundraising activity that just further violated the privacy of renters and landlords, mostly renters, and that was also ratified, rubber-stamped, at this last council meeting, the one that you're listening to now, and I'll maybe be talking about that on Sunday. I do a longer show on Sunday at 9:30 in the morning, in case you want to check this out. And by the way, these shows are archived. In case you want to hear older shows, you can go to Huff Santa Cruz, HUFFSantaCruz.org, and you'll be able to hear them. Getting back to the city council meeting and the camping ordinance discussion. What's being discussed here is the proposal that tickets for camping shall be written off if a person was on the waiting list and then took that proof to the city attorney's office with the ticket. The ticket would then be dismissed.
Just on the flip side, though, if part of my daily routine would be, you know, if I'm trying to find work and try to get out of a homeless situation, if part of my routine is go over there to get this thing because I'd sleep outside because I want to, you know, avoid a ticket.
Mm-hmm. It's completely ridiculous to do that if you know you're not going to be given a place for 4 to 6 weeks. Why would you go over day after day when you know nothing is going to happen for 4 to 6 weeks? I mean, Tony hasn't either been listening to what's going on or hasn't taken it in.
For me, to pros and cons. And then what about the other question? The other concern I raised, I asked staff about some kind of a complaint system of some sort for folks that don't want to stay there because they feel they can't stay there because of their health and safety for some reason. Like, do you guys have complaint processes?
Yeah, we definitely have a grievance procedure and a process for that. I do think that when you're talking about that, you highlight the topic that, yeah, there's definitely homeless people who don't want to stay in shelters, who don't like the environment, that have been socially isolated for years, that they fear for their safety. There's a lot of complex reasons why somebody may not prefer the shelter environment.
Right.
And if you're considering those things, then you may want to consider whether or not you want a camping ban in Santa Cruz, because that's kind of more of the conversation you're having.
And actually, I have a sense that she really does like the camping ban, but doesn't want to say so explicitly.
Okay. I also don't think we wouldn't want to create an incentive for people to issue false complaints about the homeless services center in order to have that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would.
That's my concern.
That would be.
I know that's a risk, but at the same time, it's just another form of that positive checkoff that we're talking about. You know, go there, sign up, get on the wait list, and then if you get your ticket, you go prove that you were on the wait list. You know, I mean, I like this. Kind of receipt idea. I think it's creative. And similarly, you know, if I think folks have a legitimate complaint or a reason why they feel they can't stay there. I don't know. I mean, like, because of by the sheer nature of the positive checkoff process that they have to go through, I mean, that in itself is a barrier. Like, oh, I mean, some folks, I don't know, I think that helps weed out the folks that were really serious about it and the ones that were just trying to look for an excuse by the fact that you got to go out and fill out a form now, you know. So anyways, that's my...
All right.
My thoughts about that.
All right. Cynthia, then Don.
Yes, I'm going to go ahead and move the recommendation that we have before us as it is, and it's my
Cynthia
preference.
Cynthia Matthews.
Second.
It's my preference that the details be worked out administratively.
Yeah, so we've got a motion and a second. Don?
Just one comment and one suggestion, I guess, what Cynthia said about the administrative details, I think that this doesn't preclude what you just suggested,
right,
Tony. It would be up to the city attorney's office to determine the way of verifying if someone was on the waiting list and if he could use that, quote, receipt method or just a call to check in. So I think we're not answering that question yet, and it's probably, if we got started down getting into that level of detail, we'd be here too long. The other thing that I wanted to suggest is that we could... just have a little flexibility of just saying where it says offered shelter programs offered by the Homeless Services Center, the River Street Shelter, or any existing shelter program recognized by the city attorney.
That's fine. We had talked
that
about
would take
that.
Care
I just
of mine.
Forgot
That's
to
fine.
Say it.
Did
so.
You get
yeah.
that, Lori? Did I say it too?
Yes. Very good. Yeah.
So anyway, with that, I'd be supportive of the motion.
So any other comments?
So So then what we're saying is we'll leave it up to the city attorney to figure out the administrative details about it.
With Monica. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. With homeless.
With the
with emergency shelter
with
providers.
With the shelters, yeah.
The shelter providers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I hope the city attorney's office will look at this discussion or remember it. And I just wanted to suggest the receipt method being one way of trying to deal with that.
However, the proposal did not come out of the Homeless Services Center and the city attorney. It came out of Rotkin and the city attorney. It was a political proposal that I suggest was probably motivated by Peace Camp 2010 and the legal threat of some kind of serious overturning of the entire camping ordinance, because at the present time, until there is a clear statement that it is legal to sleep somewhere in Santa Cruz, and that is, in fact, one of the provisions of this law. I don't actually have it in front of me, but I will in a moment. And that is that the city has recently made it illegal and a jailing offense to have a fourth sleeping ban ticket. That was a law passed in July by the behest of the city attorney. And that turned the sleeping ordinance from an infraction into a misdemeanor again, all in spite of the fact that 11 years ago we thought we'd gotten rid of that, because after months of, actually years of struggle and months of city meetings, it was made into the only part of the city code that had to be an infraction. Couldn't be turned into a misdemeanor. Well, they turned it into a misdemeanor by saying that if you don't deal with three infractions of any kind, the fourth infraction will be a misdemeanor. It doesn't even have to be three sleeping tickets. It can be three jaywalking tickets. Then if you get a sleeping ticket, that's a misdemeanor, as I understand it. And maybe I should double-check that with John Barisoni, but that's my understanding of it. So this ordinance change, which I'm still trying to get dredged up on the Internet, it's a little hard to find, and I think I may be about to find it. It has an interesting readout to it. And not only does it say, the city attorney shall dismiss citations, but it also says, if I am at the right point here, and let me take a look, going down to item 28, camping ordinance amendment, and I'm almost there. It's resolving. Here's the introduction, and here's the actual wording of the ordinance. A second section of the ordinance says, as I wait for this little computer to resolve so I can actually read it, you're tuned, by the way, to Free Radio or Freak Radio. It's 18 watts we're at, not 10, so that's good. A person shall not be in violation of this chapter if at the time of his or her citation for a violation of this chapter, either the winter shelter was filled to capacity or the person is currently on the waiting list for the various homeless service center, River Street shelter, and I think they amended it to add any other shelter service okayed by the city attorney. So if you're not in violation of the chapter, then that's the out that the city attorney wants, so that the ordinance itself is not unconstitutional, even though the police practice will continue to be unconstitutional by harassing people at night when there is no shelter. Even though a simple phone call to the shelter can determine there is no shelter and the police should back off. That's not what's provided in this ordinance. What's provided is they go after you, they hassle you, they ticket you, you troop on over to the homeless service center, you get on the waiting list. Or if you're already on the waiting list, you say, "Wait, officer, I'm on the waiting list." He says, "That doesn't matter. You got to go to the city attorney. Here's your ticket. You got to move. You can't be here." Although, I suppose you could argue, given the wording here, a person shall not be in violation of this chapter if they were currently on the waiting list. You could refuse to sign your ticket, saying, "I'm on the waiting list. Here's my proof. Back off and fuck off." Or if you want to be nicer, have a good day or have a nice night, officer. Perhaps you should go harass someone else for sleeping. So there are actually two provisions for this law. One is that a person shall not be in violation, period, if they are on a waiting list or if the shelter, Winter Armory shelter, is full, and also that citations can be dismissed. So it's interesting. There's another aspect I hadn't seen before this moment, which is that a person who is approached by a police officer once this law goes into effect.
But not the only method.
And let's just leave the council aside for a moment. A person may simply say, look, I'm on the waiting list. This is proof I'm on the waiting list. I'm not in violation of this chapter. Here's a copy of the law. Leave me alone. You want to write me a citation? You can. I'm not going to sign it. And if you do try to make me sign it, it's a false arrest because I've given you evidence that I'm on the waiting list, and you will find later, and you can find right now by calling, that I'm on the waiting list. So please leave me alone. I'm here at City Hall. I have a sign that says, end the sleeping ban. I'm sleeping here because I want the city to know that they still need to end the sleeping ban in spite of this, you know, cosmetic change that they're putting in. So I'm going to go back to my business of what I'm doing and also try to get a good night's sleep. So that might be one alternative that people can use now. And it's a possibility I hadn't thought of before. These things just seem to come up. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. You are tuned to the 18-watt power of Free Radio Santa Cruz. We're going to try to get our 100-watt transmitter back once we get the part fixed and it's being sent away to foreign lands. I'm not sure where that is, or maybe it's domestic lands. But you can. We need donations. If you go online to freakradio.org, you can find ways to help kick down for this, I think, unique station here. Well, if not unique, it's certainly good, and I wish there were more like it. So look at freakradio.org's website, see if you can help us out, and maybe we'll be able to beam up the power again and get past Air One with its rabble-de-babble. You can also, of course, hear us on freakradio.org, and that's where people have been listening, and hopefully you'll continue to listen both on the air and on the stream. Getting back to the last of the City Council's dance around the sleeping ordinance, or I guess the way I put it in the article was, want to trade your constitutional rights for a place on the waiting list?
I want to make a brief comment, which is I want to make sure that this is not being seen as undermining the camping ban, which is, I think, a policy that's been in effect for a long time, and there's many good policy reasons for that. And, in fact, I would argue that many of the services that this community provides that are above and beyond what is required by law or what most other communities provide is a result of fact that we do have a camping ban, that people aren't impacted in their neighborhoods and in parks and other places. And so while it may not, it's not a perfect system, it certainly does, I think it creates the kind of public support and governmental support to provide the very good programs that are compassionate and that do good work in our community.
Exactly, I think, is the opposite of the truth as shown by what happened in Fort Lauderdale and Miami after the camping bans there were overturned in the Pottinger decision of the late 90s. And those situations, because homeless people then were allowed to be visible and sleeping, the city was forced to provide more homeless services than they ever had before. And that, I think, would be the outcome of a camping ordinance, the lifting of the camping ordinance here. People would be required to provide more services because they would realize the extent of the problem, and it would be seen. People would no longer have to hide what they were. You know, you don't have to go hide in the ghetto or hide in the slums, but it becomes legal to be visible in the light of the sun, or in this case, in the light of the moon.
Of homelessness. So, unless there are any other comments, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Those opposed? Passes unanimously, 5-0. We have a sister cities appointment. I'd like to go around and have people make nominations.
And
I'd like to.
And we actually have a little more of that, but there's actually an interesting interview coming up. Let's hear a little musical break. I'll take a musical break while I cue up the tape, and then we'll hear a little more of the ending off this sort of marathon session about the sleeping ordinance at City Council. And we'll see where that goes.
The hallway.
the question, who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason, our president. Which is the question, who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Who owns the land? Could it be 90 million dead Indians? Who owns the land? Could it be 6 million Jews? Who owns the land? Is there a connection? Who owns the land? Who owns the imperialism? Who owns the land? Will someone please tell me? Who owns the land? I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be.
Well, this September 2010, about 11:10, here at Peace Camp 2010, and having mislaid another tape recorder, which hopefully will reappear one place or another, I'm here on the sidewalk in front of City Hall, standing beside Santa Cruz Police Department car 28, as well as Lee, Gary, and Linda, who are chatting about the new ordinance being proposed for sleeping ban modifications or camping ordinance modifications at the Tuesday 3 p.m. City Council meeting. Ed Fry's vehicle with the porta potty is parked here. Gary's bedding is laid out on the sidewalk. And then somebody else has laid out a ground cloth on the City Hall brick area, which has been declared a trespass zone. Then up here by the Ed Fry's truck, we have another two sleepers who are laid out and trying to get a little slumber. And across the street, in another forbidden zone, the area recently declared a no trespassing after 9 o'clock zone, we have, it looks like another, is it two sleepers or is it two piles of bedding? It's not entirely clear. Let me go a little closer. Yes, it's a sleeping man and his pooch, who are laid out slumbering. Behind him is some toilet paper and other camping implements. And the police car is running its motor, wasting taxpayer dollars with gasoline. There's some being used, even though it's not clear why he wants to run his motor. Maybe he just likes to hear the chugga-chugga-chugga sound, or wants to be ready to dash off. There's a couple of signs here. Any law against sleep is unjust, says the new sign. Why is sleep illegal? It's written all on the edge of the sign. Why brains need REM and less cycles to live. See what else this sign says. 6.36010A1, 6.6010A10B, 6.6010C, and A3. Again, these are the code section numbers of the laws under which people have been cited. 13.04.11C, which is the closed areas of City Hall and the library. Sleep deprivation is torture. And one of our activists is trying to chat with a police officer.
Another day in the life. That's got to suck. That's got to be the worst part about it, if there was some big
friendly chat between a police driver and one of the locals who sleeps here at night.
Oh, them dirt.
That's illegal. I'm sorry, sir. You're not supposed to do that. Sleeping in Santa Cruz after 11 is illegal, as any fool knows.
And?
Peace Camp 2010. Here's another sign, another nice-looking sign. A large Peace Camp 2010 lettering, and then smaller lettering, Santa Cruz, California, USA, July 4th to when? That's when the sleeping
ordinance began. Now the officer is beginning to shine his spotlight around to keep an eye on the potential criminals. He's checking things out. Give sleep a chance, says the small lettering on the edge of the sign. The snore heard round the world, declares the sign. All we are saying is... And there's even smaller language that I can't even read that's on this sign. So there's a number of nicely lettered signs.
Spotlighted infrared built into it.
I don't know. Here's a bold individual who's trespassing and about to sleep, violating two ordinances, perhaps, and perhaps munching as well on the city hall grounds. We'll see what our
eating
first
is a crime, too.
Eating is life-sustaining behavior. A little discussion here about the implications of the proposed ordinance change, and one of our main discussants is leaving, but or maybe just taking a walk. The new provision, of the law, allows you to have a ticket dismissed if you bring evidence that on the date of the ticket, the sleeping ticket, that you. You are on a waiting list at the Homeless Service Center, the River Street Shelter. The question that arose, and Linda LeMaster seemed to feel that you needed to have a social security number and perhaps some other documentation. I was suggesting we needed to verify exactly what's required before the Tuesday 3 o'clock session to be sure to get the latest updated information. Linda may well be completely right, but I think it still needs to be verified. You pointed out, Gary, that the verification can be difficult for people who, A, are illegal immigrants, B, had their property or their identification confiscated or stolen, if you will, by the police department, or C, for one reason or another, have lost their material, had it stolen by someone else.
Well, I was just thinking about B, but yeah, sure. I'm sure any number of situations could apply where people have a problem getting on the list or wanting to be on that list. I mean, there's identity theft, which is a pretty serious problem, and who can say that that particular 501c corporation is sloppy with their records or not?
Plus, we don't know if there are requirements for being on the list or not being on the list. They may not allow certain people to be on that list. There may be, for example, people excluded from the waiting list because of behavioral problems, because of alcoholic or drug conditions, because of criminal behavior, because of rule violations. There could have been all kinds of reasons why they're excluding particular people. In other words, I think it's important to determine what are the specific restrictions. If those restrictions apply, then it does not serve as an open-ended release valve that will allow people to get their tickets dismissed. Of course, this all begs the question of why you would even require people, given the acknowledged shelter emergency and shelter shortage, that's hard to say, that why you would even, being on a waiting list is not equivalent to having a shelter bed. And the idea that if you're on a waiting list, that somehow meets the condition for, oh, see, we're not going to, you know, that's not the same thing as having a shelter bed. But I guess if you're having your ticket dismissed, well...
To me, it sounds like they want to outsource a no-bid contract to a third party that's going to make money off this list.
Well, they're not terribly generous with the Homeless Service Center. I mean, they are giving $4.1 million to a desal plant. Scott Camp Dresser and McKee, the group that is accused of being war profiteers in Iraq. However... They only give $168,000 a year to the Homeless Service Center. That's like 1/30th of what they are giving tomorrow, the after tomorrow, to Camp Dresser and McKee. And it's, you know...
Camp Dresser and McKee, who's that?
That's a contracting group that's going to build a desal plant here in Santa Cruz.
Anybody know anything about them?
They are accused by various websites of being war profiteers in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Oh, really? Is this a federal war profiteer or a local war profiteer?
Well, I think it's an international war profiteer. Camp Dresser McKee is an international corporation. Rotkin explained to me that that was a different subsidiary of the same group. He had some rather slippery description that he had.
I don't doubt it would.
he had his own way of describing it. But the point is, this homeless service center doesn't get a lot of money. And I don't know if it's so much a money-making activity as the way that the city has is saying, see, we're not arresting people for sleeping at night. We are giving them an alternative, which is they can always go and sign up on this waiting list, and then tickets will be dismissed. But as Ed Fry said tonight on the community TV, where he spoke with Ray Glock-Grunike and Louis LaFortune about the camp, Peace Camp 2010, about the sleeping ban, that doesn't stop people from having their sleep interrupted and deprived, their rights interfered with, ID checks made, property taken, searches made, and all the other crap.
That's great. Well, you know, the property taken, that's pretty egregious, especially when it's, you know, the protest materials, because it's pretty obvious what they're wanting to do there, which squelch the speech. But this new thing with the runaround to try and ungrandfather people that... in theory, should have been able to go down there and get the shelter was full that evening paper, mm-hmm. which was the process, and apparently it's no longer going to be the process tomorrow. No, Tuesday. Then it takes 2 weeks to kick in after they voted, or how's this?
Well, this is apparently...
It's so confusing. I mean, you can never... They're always penciling in a new rule, so it's really difficult to keep straight what we're supposed to do.
According to Linda, the process several months ago was if you got a ticket... Whether you're on a waiting list or not, you could go back and ask for a letter. And when you got the letter, they would put you on a new waiting list, but they would still give you a letter stating that on such and such a date, whether you were on the waiting list at that time or not, there was no shelter, because it's a fact. There was no shelter. Now, and not just because of this law, but apparently the policy change they made, perhaps because Peace Camp 2010 was active and they didn't want to, you know, provide justification for people for sleeping outside and amnesty for them if they were political protesters, they changed their policy so that you had to be on the waiting list on the date of the actual citation. So this policy by the Homeless Service Center is a month or two old, and it predates the legal change being proposed on Tuesday.
But basically it's all fraudulent anyway. I mean,
legal change, however, ratifies what they did 2 months ago.
Basically, it's fraudulent. I mean, basically, what they're trying to do is get rid of people. And that we're still here goes to show that if there was a legal way to make us disappear, they would have done it long ago. They lack a legal way, so they make all this crap up to make it annoying as fucking possible. And it's about time for them to lose big in court.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? We are switching to slow speed. So, we need an injunction, obviously. And I actually did talk to a paralegal, a new attorney today, who happened to sit down next to me at the Saturn, and we'll see if she wants to help. They all, you know, express an initial interest, then to fade into the woodwork, but you never can tell.
You never can tell.
And in the meantime, enjoy your spot on the sidewalk, Gary J.
I hope Linda's still here.
I'm going to go check her out, see if she's up happening. Well, I'm here at the library on September 13th.
Why are you here today?
And what I'm doing is checking out Peace Camp 2010. We're doing some recording here. And there's a few folks who are still here. There's a guy with a bike that has a sign on it that says legalize. And then there's a series of items, sleeping, blankets, sitting, asking for... asking for something, asking for, let's see here, asking for human needs, at lying down, smoking, eating, and drinking, and living in public. Legalized living in public is what the sign says. And last night, Todd, you see there was a bunch of folks here sleeping, and police came. I got a call from Gary around 2 or 3 in the morning saying the police had arrived. You say Gary got a ticket?
Yes, I believe Gary did get a ticket last night.
Mm-hmm. And we also have an evil smoker. You got a ticket.
Yes, I did.
And what is your name, sir?
Yanni.
And Yanni, how did the police treat you? What happened?
They were pretty chill, but they took me in for smoking.
For smoking and allegedly for intoxication of some kind. Did you get actually a court date, or did you get a citation?
Citation.
And how long were you? Were you held in jail, or were you just taken to the police station?
Just at the station and stuff.
Okay. And did you notice how many folks were here when the police arrived?
About 12.
Really? Which side of the street were they on?
Both.
And were people in the forbidden no trespassing zone here next to the library?
Yes.
And did anybody get a ticket for that you know of?
How do you say his name again, dude?
Scum.
Scum did the let's see, the fellow sleeping with the dog?
Yes.
And what did the people do after they got... You probably didn't know because you weren't here, because they took you away in a car, right? Maybe Todd here would know. Any reflections, anything you want to say about this for free radio?
I'm all good.
Okay. And we've been talking with?
Yanni.
Thank you, Yanni.
Got tobacco, man? You got a cigarette?
I heard some noise.
And
you get the rollie?
And Todd, were you here for any of these ticketing, or did you just hear about it secondhand?
No, I was sleeping. I was sleeping in Ed's truck, actually, in the cab.
And you yourself got a ticket? You were awakened?
Nope, I wasn't bothered at all.
So they just ignored you completely?
I think they ignored me, and I think that they told Gary this morning that he needed to find somewhere that they couldn't see. They gave the forbidden order. He said, "Well, where should I sleep?" And they said, "Where we can't see you."
I see. Out of sight, out of mind, eh?
I think that's the idea.
Because I know they have ticketed people in the truck cab in the past. I believe, in the last week, somebody got a ticket for being in a vehicle, right?
Not sure about that.
And, if you see Gary, thank him for giving me a call. And I will I'll remind you that tomorrow at 10 o'clock is the sinister sidewalk citation 2 resuming trial. And also it's... 3 o'clock here at City Hall. They're going to be modifying the camping ordinance tomorrow with a minor modification. It's hard to say. It may have some impact. Anyway, thank you, man.
Thank you.
Anybody else have anything they want to say?
So they're changing.
Sorry about that, folks. That's the underlying palimpsest. Well, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. And let's hear a little more street interviews. But coming up shortly, it's Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs. Stay tuned. But here's a little more street interviews before we waddle off into the sunset or the moonrise.
Of the Department of Justice. We're the only justice in the hallways, as I like to say, outside Department 10, talking with Ed Frye attorney, Gary, the leader of the pack, and the well-dressed...
I'm not a leader of any pack.
He's an anti-authoritarian non-leader of no pack. But an observer, certainly, of the citation situation...
As a no pack, has he provided any no contribution?
Any tickets last night?
We have Ed Frye.
As you can see, our technology is somewhat limited. I believe we're having problems with this tape recorder. But
I got one. You see any citations?
I think we have another report here, which I'm going to try to squeeze in.
Ed, did you see any citations given?
Yeah. In fact, I got one.
For?
And there were several other people who got them, too. I was...
It's more interesting than citations. I think we were having some problems with this tape, as you can imagine. And I think we've really reached the end of the show, so I guess that's appropriate. Back again, tomorrow I'll be in court from 10:30 to noon, and then maybe for another hour after that, with concluding arguments in the sinister sing-song sidewalk citation 2 case. Myself and Blind Bear Robert Facer face criminal charges for unreasonably disturbing noise for singing downtown on January 6th. This trial is probably the longest trial I've ever been in. Maybe the Heil Krohn case was longer. It's hard to say, but that one didn't even get to trial. So this really is the longest trial that I remember, longest infraction trial. You, too, can be a historical observer to this foolishness. Come on down, Department 10, basement of the county building. Check it out. Be there, be square, solidarity with your fellow activists and all that sort of thing if you're interested. It is a constitutional issue. It does have to do with police use of unreasonably disturbing noise to allow hecklers, whether they be residents or merchants, to veto street culture and street music. And as such, it is a dangerous practice that is being done, and one that we challenged on January 6th, and we were ticketed for challenging it. We didn't continue to play. We didn't continue to perform, but we asked questions like, how loud can we be, officer? And the officer had no answer to that question, so we had no notice as to what would be legal. And we are going to try to inquire of Mr. Riley tomorrow how loud he felt we could be and still be allowed to perform constitutionally on the sidewalk. He gave us no indication of that either. Maybe we should win the case, but we won't, because we have a commissioner who is, frankly, just a little too close to the police department. Speaking of which, we have a police agent who's just arrived, who's a well-known undercover man. I'm sure, what covers have you been under recently, Uncle Dennis?
Only my own.
Very good, very good. Well, we won't go into the details about that. But I understand that you're a man
boring.
Well, I don't know about that. I think we have to talk to your intimate associates as to how boring they found your undercover.
You'll find out it's pretty boring.
I'm not about to crawl under to find out, but still. Now, I understand that you're the 18-watt man. You were able to effectively, you and others, to put together a transmitter. Is that correct? Speak into the mic there, Uncle Dennis. Were you able to...
Yes, we were able to resurrect an old transmitter, get it operational, and get it on the air.
And what's the difference in range between the old resurrected transmitter and the one that we had before that went kapooey and is looking for a part?
Well, the ranges are pretty much the same. That's because FM radio is line-of-sight radio. If you can see it from the antenna, you can broadcast to it. The only difference between 18 watts and 100 watts, which is our old transmitter power, is that some of the areas that are sort of out at the fringes or down in the canyons, like in Capitola, downtown SoCal, those places, they're not going to pick us up at 18 watts, whereas they could with 100.
So the folks who are in the more advantageous spots will be able to hear us. And
yeah, every place that you could hear us loud and clear before, you can hear us loud and clear now. If we were slightly fuzzy before, we're probably not there now.
So when you drove over, did you have a radio? Were you able to hear the station?
Oh, yeah. You can hear us all on the west side, on the east side. It's just if you go down into the city of Capitola, down in the canyons past 41st Avenue, you're not going to hear us at all, whereas we used to be sort of there. You know, it's...
Well, my thanks to you and others who put this together and put it out there, because I want to be heard. Is that clear? And I want to be heard downtown.
Well, you're heard downtown, Robert. The only problem is you're currently standing trial for it.
That's being a little too well heard. Or perhaps not herded enough. Well, Dennis, I'm going to turn the mic over to you, and I'm going to turn the equipment over to you, and I'm just going to turn it all over to you, and it's yours. Take it away.
Well, our listeners are going to have to listen to me drool on for a minute here while I open up my CD pack and pull out something. Let's bring out some Savoy Brown here from the collection called The Best of Savoy Brown. This one's called Can't Get Next to You, Babe.
Hang it next to you, babe. Hang it next to you.
my soul desires. Unhappy am I with all the power that was there. You got the key to my happiness, and I
can't get next to you, babe.
No, I can't.
Can't get next to you,
but I'm trying.
Can't get next to you, babe.
Never know how.
Savoy Brown there. Can't get next to you, babe, off of a collection I got from years ago. And let's see here. Oh, where'd it go? It's in here somewhere. Yeah, a collection called The Best of Savoy Brown. And that particular track, I Can't Get Next to You, came off of their album Street Corner Talkin' from way back in 1971. I am Uncle Dennis. You are listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz. If you are listening to us on the air, count your blessings, because our monstrous 18-watt transmitter is reaching your receiver. But there are probably folks out there who are having some problems. And we do apologize, but frankly, we had not a whole lot we could do about it. About a week ago, a little over a week ago, we had a fire in our transmitter. Occasionally happens with electronic equipment. It just burned up. So it was a little problem there. Took us off the air. Actually took us off the air for about a week as Uncle Dennis attempted to determine what the problem was, how to fix it, made an attempt at fixing it, and then wound up having to go into an overcrowded storage locker and dig for a couple of hours to find the old 18-watt transmitter from years ago, an old Free Radio Berkeley transmitter. And we managed to get that resurrected, tuned up, and back on the air. We're still in stereo. We're using the stereo exciter from our 100-watt transmitter to power the 18-watter, because it's only the output stage that burned up. And so if you... It's a kludge, folks. Frankly, it's do-it-yourself radio at its best. We take two pieces of equipment that didn't work and turned them into one piece of equipment that did. That's what it's all about. Free radio, 15 years and counting. We're still in the air. We like it that way. Here on From the Cream to the Dregs, we're going to be here till 11 o'clock tonight playing music of the 60s and the 70s and beyond. And, of course, our brew of the week, we have another selection from Bear Republic Brewing up in Healdsburg to open up in 20 minutes or so. And then, of course, at 9 o'clock, the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. Stay tuned for that. And at 10 o'clock, we'll have a spotlight group of the week for you. Not sure what we're going to pull out and play, but it will be vinyl from years ago. And we'll go digging in the stacks for stuff that we haven't played in a while, just to make every week a little different. Not just that's why this show is different from all those shows, all those top 40 rock and roll shows. Not this one. It's different. If you want to call it anything, it's called a deep library rock and roll. We also play blues. What we don't play is folk rock, so don't tune in looking for any of that. And, of course, we'll try and figure out why line two isn't working and a few other things. But, you know, life goes on here at Free Radio. Stay tuned for more music like this.
Okay. Before we get started, I'd just like to say that we are making a live recording here tonight, and should be A-OK. So right now, Boston Tea Party is proud to present to you the one and only incredible Fleetwood Mac. Come on, let's hear it for us.